Today on the LA Food Podcast, I'm your host Lucas Servodio, bringing you a cure for your crippling social anxiety that doesn't involve booze, drugs, or calling your mom for a pep talk on all of your good qualities and the time your fifth grade teacher gave you a sticker that said, "Best cheeks." We all do that, right? Regardless, we're joined today by Hannah Willen, the co-founder of Kava Hanna, Los Angeles' first ever kava bar. Kava is a drink that's traditional to the Pacific Islands. It's been consumed and celebrated for more than 3,000 years and is known for making you relaxed and happy without any ABV to speak of. Kava Hanna is looking to bring the kava experience to Los Angeles, and today's conversation is a fascinating journey into the drink's history and its many health and wellness benefits. We also get into the topic of what it's like to have an idea for a business and transform that idea into a reality. We talk about the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, and Hanna shares some pretty inspiring wisdom for anyone looking to start a business of their own. But first, it's time to get political, and I'm not talking about gloating over Kevin McCarthy's misfortunes. It's the end of the legislative session in California, and there are several new laws on Governor Newsom's desk that stand to impact the restaurant industry in big ways. Being the helpful podcast that we are, we're going to give you a quick rundown of what those laws are and offer our takes on how they could potentially help or hurt our beloved local businesses. Without further ado, let's chow down. Dear listener, I gotta tell you something. I am a massive fan of fall. I'm a huge fan of the autumn maple coffee that hits the shelves at Trader Joe's. I am really into flavored coffee in a way that's kind of embarrassing and frankly unhealthy, but I absolutely love that stuff and I stock up on it so that I can keep drinking it until like I run out in February. I love the advent of the Champions League in the soccer world. This year I have my favorite Italian team Lazio in there, so I've been watching it with even more interest than I usually do. I love the return of football season. I love the advent of Dodger playoffs, which kick off tomorrow. I mean, couldn't be more excited for that. Fall is, I think, the best season. I don't even think that's controversial, especially in Los Angeles. Like, most people lament fall in other parts of the country because it means summer's coming to an end. It means things are going to get colder. But in Los Angeles, you know, we get the best weather of the year in the fall. The air starts to get a little cleaner, the temperatures drop a little bit, but you still have enough sunshine and warmth to do fun things. So I think fall's the best. One other reason I think fall is arguably one of the best seasons is that it marks the end of the legislative session in Sacramento for the Assembly and the Senate. Now, I know that sounds like a nerdy reason to be excited, but the reason that's exciting is because what you get to see is you get to see all of these new potential laws that could be hitting these streets if Governor Newsom signs them into law. And yes, that's Governor Newsom of French Laundry fame, to put it in a food context. Now, there are a few laws that have recently hit Governor Newsom's desk that stand to impact the food and beverage industry in pretty significant ways. So I thought it would be a good idea for us to just go through them and kind of break down what's happening, where things stand, what the impacts might be, and whether we think these are good things or bad things. So let me just caveat all this by saying that I'm not a policy expert. I am making these judgments based entirely off of vibes, but you know what? I think I'm a good vibes kind of guy. So hopefully, you know, you'll be able to take my opinions with a grain of salt. But also, I would love to hear from you if you disagree with my opinions. If you're like, "Hey, Luca, actually, what you just said, that's really stupid. It's much stupider than usual, and therefore, I think you should know my opinion on this." By all means, hit us up, send us a message on Instagram, TikTok, whatever. I'd love to hear from you. But without further ado, here we go, okay? So first, I want to go through the laws that have already been signed by Governor Newsom. These are the ones that hit his desk, and he basically knew already, I want to sign these into law. These are good ideas. The first one is AB1228. This is being called the most ambitious fast food worker protection law that has ever been enacted into law in this country. It's doing something which I think is a good idea. It's increasing the hourly wage from $15.50 an hour to $20 an hour for fast food chains with more than 60 locations across the country. Now, I think this is interesting because there was already a law on the books that had been put forth and was, I believe, either signed or going to be signed very soon, called AB 257. And this was going to increase the wage to $22 an hour for fast food workers. But what happened is the fast food industry really hated that idea and mobilized against that bill. They in fact had gathered enough signatures to potentially start a referendum on that bill, and that would have cost everybody a lot of money because it would have gone, you know, become a ballot measure. We would have had to vote on it. It would have been a whole thing. Basically, what the assembly has done in California is they've said, we want to avoid that situation, so let's try to take in some of the feedback from the fast food industry and come to a compromise so that we can get a law passed without going through all of that hullabaloo. So this new bill, AB 1228, which Governor Newsom just signed, is the amended version. I believe there are similar provisions in this bill to the one that were in the previous bill. For example, this bill does also establishes a council where workers and employers have to work together with the state to actually figure out what the best wage standards are, you know, come to consensus on things like health and safety issues, working hours, things like that, right? But the thing that kind of makes me scratch my head is I wonder why the fast food industry agreed to this, right? Isn't it a little bit suspicious that the fast food industry was going hell or high water against the previous bill, but then all of a sudden decides that this one is fine? That leaves me with some questions. So I'll need to dig into this a little bit more, but typically if a big industry agrees to something, there's got to be a reason why they are agreeing to it, right? And maybe it's as simple as the fact that the old law was going to raise the minimum wage to $22 an hour in California for fast food workers, and the new one only raises it to $20 an hour. So maybe fast food companies saw that as enough of a compromise to not go and start a really costly referendum. But I just wonder, is there more to it? Are there any poison pills in here that we as voters should be aware of? I don't know the answer to this, but it does make you think, okay? So what grade am I giving this? I think, you know, raising wages is a great thing, so I'm on board with it. But I just have some questions, okay? So it's definitely a green flag, but there's a little hint of orange in there as well, okay? Also signed into law, we've got AB 1325. This is also known by the name of Micro Enterprise Home Kitchen Operations Program. Basically, what this does is it takes an existing program that California set up to allow home-operated cooking businesses to function. So we're talking like pop-ups that are run out of home kitchens. The old program already allowed them to operate. This new law basically allows them to operate on a larger scale. So whereas prior to this law, they were able to serve like 60 meals a month or something and make up to $50,000 a year, this new program allows them to serve 90 meals and it allows them to make $100,000 annually. I think this is overall an amazing thing because we saw, especially during the pandemic, that pop-ups run out of home kitchens are huge. They're a huge way for people in the food and beverage industry to break out on their own, test out a concept, see if it's successful, and not only make a living, but potentially also lay the groundwork for a whole new business in the future. We've seen a lot of pop-ups become brick and mortars, you know, Little Fish, a pop-up that was making like McDonald's style McFish sandwiches, but fancier. They have been a pop-up since the pandemic, and now they're opening their own brick and mortar in Echo Park. Chechi's Gastronomia in Silver Lake, they also started as a pop-up out of that family's kitchen in Silver Lake, making focaccias and lasagnas, and now they've got one of my favorite sandwich shops over there on Sunset in Silver Lake. So I think this is overall a really good thing that the state is doing, although I do have a question about why they are capping the amount of money these businesses can make. Like, what is the big problem if operations make more than $100,000 annually? That I'm not, my only guess there is that they're just trying to test the waters. They're just trying to see, how does this thing go? Are we able to regulate this in an effective way? And then we'll continue to raise that. But it seems weird to me that like there's a cap there. Like, what is really to be gained there? So I gotta say, this one's green light as well, with a slight hint of, not even orange, it's like a very pale yellow, you know, just something, a little caution flag, a little asterisk. It's more of a question mark. Why are we capping the amount of money these businesses can make? That I don't understand. Now we're going to move on to the bills that are yet to be signed. So these are the interesting ones because they're on Governor Newsom's desk, and if we like him, you know, we as voters can make our opinions know, you know, call the governor's office, you know, reach out, tell him you want this signed. Or if you don't like it, you can do the opposite, right? Call him, let him know, hey, that bill, not into it, please don't sign it, okay? So first and foremost, we got SB 497. This is a bill that protects workers from retaliation. Now, what this bill does is it basically takes any California worker who has a claim or a complaint to make about wages and protects them from illegal employer retaliation. It's like if your employer is, for example, engaging in matters of like wage theft or not giving your tips when they're supposed to be giving them to you, you are able to whistleblow on that or to complain about that and not face employer retaliation. This is really, really critical right now because according to the California's Labor Commission's office, we've seen retaliation claims increase by 500% between 2018 and 2021. Now, there may be a number of reasons as to why. My guess has to do with the fact that, you know, 2018, that's like post Me Too movement. People start to really notice and take notice of the kind of behavior their employers are engaging in. And I think they become more and more inspired to speak out when they see something that's wrong. The people who are against this bill, it's organizations like the California Chamber of Commerce. Their whole like beef with this is they think that passing this law could make it so that employers are going to get a ton of frivolous claims. I don't really see that as a big problem. I'd rather have some frivolous claims if it means that people who have legitimate claims are protected, and especially with all of the bad behavior we've seen happening recently with the likes of Nobu Malibu, with Mother Wolf, Katin, the John and Vinny groups, like they've all been coming under attack, and there have been allegations that those particular places have retaliated against workers that have complained. Personally, I think that's unacceptable, and I think that this is going to be a good law if and when Governor Newsom signs it. Secondly, we got Senate Bill 616. This one increases the number of paid sick days from 3 to 5. This one I'm not even going to talk about too much. This is good, right? We want people to get paid if they're sick. But my only like question for this one is like, what happens if it's a really, really, really small business and increasing the number of paid sick days from 3 to 5 takes a really, really, really outsized hit on their margins? Maybe there should be some sort of provision here that like the sick day thing should go from 3 to 5 if your business is bigger than a certain level. But if it's smaller than that level, then we can keep it at 3 for now just to see how things go. That would be my one like, you know, piece of feedback to this legislation. But, you know, overall, paying people when they're sick seems like a good thing. And finally, I think this is one of the most fun ones. It's AB 374. Now, this one would let cannabis lounges, So like weed shops, basically, places where you can go buy weed and smoke it. It would also allow them to sell freshly cooked meals and soft drinks. They wouldn't be allowed to sell alcohol, but they would be allowed to sell fresh food that's made on premise and soft drinks. I absolutely love this. It's basically trying to like create the like Amsterdam weed cafe environment, but in California. The argument from proponents of marijuana and cannabis is that like it should be like alcohol. If you like to go out and have a drink, you're gonna want to eat something with it. And the same is true of cannabis. If you go out and you smoke, you're most likely gonna get hungry and want to munch on something, right? That's why they're called munchies. So personally, I think this is positive for society because let's face it, there's a stigma around cannabis, decreasingly so, admittedly, these days, but there's a stigma around cannabis and drugs that there isn't around alcohol. And alcohol arguably has far worse and far more detrimental effects to individuals and society than does cannabis. I'm not saying we should encourage people to smoke weed, but I think that we shouldn't be like encouraging people to drink alcohol more than we're encouraging people to smoke weed, if that makes sense. Like, we should treat those things equally, in my opinion, at a minimum. So allowing people to eat where they smoke seems like a good thing. Also, it seems like it's gonna make the stigma around cannabis go away faster. Because right now, even though it's legal, I don't know if you've ever walked into like a cannabis store, but I still feel kind of weird doing it. You know, you walk in and it's like if it does feel legitimate in that like a lot of these places have tried to make it feel like an Apple store or something like that, right? But it's always kind of like more of a bootleg Apple store. It's more like those Apple stores, like the knockoff ones that you find at like kind of shitty malls, you know? That's the vibe. And I really think like let's legitimize this shit. Let's make it feel like normal and like safe when you're going. And one way to do that is, yeah, let's have cool, interesting people sitting down having some food along with their joint or whatever. The negative here is I do think they should keep the CBD out of the food. That's just a matter of personal choice. I am yet to have food that contains THC or CBD that actually tastes good. I actually think that's impossible. I think it's impossible. I think it's impossible to make good tasting weed food. And if you have had any food that actually tastes good with THC or CBD, please let me know. I'd love to try it. I had THC pizza last year from a place called Stony Slice. And I gotta say, that's the closest I've had to actually having good food that can get you high. But would I ever have it again? Probably not. Also because the price doesn't justify like the taste, you know? And for people who love food, taste is everything, you know? So until some real chef gets in there and figures out how to make this shit work, I think let's continue to keep the THC out of the food. And if we do that, then I'm here for it. Okay? Listen, that's enough about laws, enough about politics. We are going to move on now to the conversation with Hannah Willen about kava, which is not technically a drug, not technically alcohol, but it does make you happy, it makes you feel good, and it doesn't have any ABV. We'll be right back. Joining us on the podcast today is the co-founder of Kavahana, Hannah Willen. Hannah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing awesome. Thank you so much for making the time to join us. Where are you calling us from today?
Santa Monica, California. It's kind of cold today, which is sad, but normally very sunny and nice here.
Yeah, beautiful Santa Monica, California. We have a little bit of an East Side bias on this podcast, so thank you for allowing us to diversify the regions where we get guests from.
Of course, of course. Yeah, I got to show up for the West Side a little bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. How long have you been living on the West Side?
I grew up in West LA, but I moved to Santa Monica in like 2019, or my family moved to Santa Monica in 2019. So, been here ever since.
Wow, have you ever dabbled with the East Side, or are you just West Side through and through?
Well, I've been to a lot of places like in Monterey Park where all the like Asian food is, the best Chinese food in LA, in my opinion. So yeah, very experienced in like going to the East Side for the best Chinese food ever.
Yeah, totally. No, there's no doubt about that. Is there even any good like Chinese food in Santa Monica?
Very little, but like more Chinese places have been coming to the West Side. So like the 99 Ranch Market is coming next month. There's some dim sum places that open. So West Side's becoming less of like a desert for Asian food, which is awesome.
Yeah, and there's like Sichuan Impression on in Westwood now too, right?
Yeah,
So
exactly.
yeah, and then of course there's Sawtelle, which you know
Yeah.
we cannot forget about. Today we're here to talk about, you know, something that I know nothing about, which is kava. I want to start with your background though. Have you worked in the food and beverage industry before founding Kava Hana?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So no, not at all. I was actually an electrical engineer and a product development engineer. Before starting Kava Hana, I invented a menstrual cup that you can use in developing countries. So I worked on that for about a year, and then yeah, I switched to Kava Hana because it's something that's really really you know, big passion of mine. And like I've been drinking kava for almost 10 years, and I wanted to share it with LA because I noticed that really there are no places where you can get kava in LA. There are like 300 something kava bars in Florida, but really nothing in LA. So kind of wanted to do something, you know, a little bit different from my background and spread a little bit of happiness. So yeah, that's why I started Kava
Menstrual cups to kava seems like a
Hana.
you know seamless transition. I actually had never even heard of kava before hearing about Kava Hana. For our listeners at home who might be as ignorant as I am, would you be able to tell us what kava is?
Yeah, so kava is a natural drink made from the roots of the kava plant. And the kava plant's only grown in Hawaii and the South Pacific, which is maybe one of the reasons why it's kind of like hard to find here. But it's a cultural drink and it's been had for over 3,000 years in the South Pacific as like a social beverage. And it brings people together, fosters conversations. And that's kind of what I wanted to bring to the beautiful city of LA. This kind of like alternative to alcohol, really, that makes you feel kind of just more like social, relaxed, happy, but without hangovers. And, you know, it's non-alcoholic, so it helps with anyone who's, you know, sober curious or looking for some like looking for alternatives to alcohol, essentially.
Yeah, what the really dumb question, but what does it taste like?
It is super earthy. It has a very earthy finish because it's from the earth. It's roots. So I would like the way I like to tell people it tastes is like it's like a very strong matcha. So if you like matcha, you might like kava.
Interesting. So, like matcha, are we talking about lattes here and like those kinds of drinks that it can be made into?
Yeah, well, traditionally kava is mixed with only water, and that's the way it's been had for over 3,000 years. But the way we do it at Kava Hana is we make it more like a latte, like a mixed drink. So we add coconut, lots of like really cool vegan ingredients. We did a saffron rose flavor once. We have our blue spirulina vanilla coconut. So we like to do fun things with kava, mix it up, make it a little bit more palatable for people trying it for the first time. And then we've noticed that you know people try it in like the latte form, the way we present it for the first time, and then they actually graduate to drinking it with just water after a while. So yeah, that's kind of the way we like to introduce people to kava.
So the latte is like the entry point for like softies like me, pretty much.
Yes, exactly.
Got it, got it.
Yeah.
So let's zoom out to when you first had it. When did you first have the opportunity to have kava?
Yeah, I had it almost 10 years ago at this point. I, you know, was drinking alcohol. My whole story is, you know, I've always had really bad social anxiety. And so I tried using alcohol to kind of like give me confidence and like make me less like anxious in social situations. And at first, like I thought, oh my gosh, alcohol cured my social anxiety. I'm able to talk to people, be confident. But it was all like fake. Fake conversations. I wasn't remembering anything I was saying to people. The next day, I felt like more anxious than I ever had before. And so, yeah, about like almost 10 years ago, I stumbled upon kava, and I went to a kava bar, and I tried kava for the first time. And for the first time in my life, I just felt kind of like me, but without the anxiety. And I was like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever tried. And I tried so many things for my anxiety before that. And so that's kind of, I've always been drinking it. I've been drinking it ever since. And about 2021 is when my co-founder and I went to the Big Island of Hawaii. We went to a kava bar on the island, and we both said, you know, this is something that we both love. Why not like spread it to LA? And that's kind of how we got Kava Hana started.
And so you talk about kava bars, right? Like, are these like coffee shops that you go to during the daytime, or are they like bars where people hang out in the evening and night?
Yeah, they're kind of both, which is really unique. Like during the day, they kind of have that more coffee shop vibe where you go and chill, you can do work, hang out. And then at night, it becomes more of a bar vibe. So some of them actually do have bars where you sit and like order drinks, just like a normal alcoholic bar. Some of them are more lounges. You can play board games with friends. So yeah, it's both. And it's a super unique place. I would highly recommend you check out a kava bar. If you ever go to the Big Island of Hawaii, I think there's one in Oahu too, on Maui. Yeah.
That's awesome. So when you and your co-founder had this idea to start Kava Hana, did you have any sort of apprehension about getting into the beverage industry, which I understand is a very, very tricky industry to get into?
Yeah, absolutely. My co-founder, he was a data scientist. So we were both kind of like from the tech industry. We had no experience in food and bev. But I think it was just mainly like we're so passionate about kava. We drink it every day. It's like just, it's completely replaced alcohol for us. And so we thought, you know, like this is something that I think like people would love and people would really enjoy in LA. So we've just kind of like been taking it one step at a time, one day at a time. There have been tons of challenges with like starting your own, like not only food and beverage business, but like in-person business. So we've just been taking it one step at a time and figuring things out along the way. That's basically the way we've been approaching entering this new industry.
Yeah, totally. And so you say like it's really helped with your anxiety, right? And we hear a lot about like the health benefits of a lot of these kinds of drinks, like kombucha, right? As an example of a non-alcoholic drink. Well, I guess kombucha has a little bit of alcohol in it, but that has, you know, the benefit of that is the probiotic qualities and what it does for your gut health, et cetera, et cetera. What benefits does kava have from a health perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of people kind of, which is very interesting, we actually got into the wellness space by accident. We partner with Ola Beach Tennis. They reached out to us. They found us at a farmer's market and they loved us. And what we found is that a lot of people in the wellness space and the fitness space have loved kava. For it's like they say it really helps them with muscle recovery because it helps them like just calm down, relax. It helps their muscles feel better after like running and playing beach tennis and all that. So that's one like physical benefit, I'd say. But the number one thing I think people mostly use kava for is the mental benefits. Kava has been studied for potentials to help with PTSD, depression, along with anxiety. There's a lot more research to be done with kava, but yeah, the initial like research that's been done so far has been really promising with a lot of mental health benefits.
Who's doing this research, if you don't mind me asking?
There's a lot of people actually. It's funny, the first time last time we went to the Big Island of Hawaii, we met up with a really renowned kava scientist named Ed Johnston. He's basically like the godfather of Hawaiian kava. He has done a lot of research into a lot of really, really interesting mental health and physical health benefits of kava. So definitely like I'd recommend checking out his work, his publications on it, because he's an amazing resource in the kava industry for sure.
That's really cool. The kava industry is not something I thought, you know, an industry I thought I'd be checking out anytime soon, but you know, you never know with what takes off. And this definitely sounds like it has all of the potential. Speaking of like the potential, you know, one term you've like mentioned in our conversation already is sober curious. And that's something I've heard said again and again, especially, you know, we've heard stories of like sober, like non-alcoholic bottle shops and non-alcoholic bars, right? Yeah. Opening up. And it does seem like anecdotally that there is an increase in the interest around being sober and sober alternatives to, like, you know, social drinking practices. Do you have, like, have you found any sort of like validation in that in terms of like market research or just like you both are smart, you know, tech industry people. You probably anticipated some sort of demand, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's another reason why, like, I started, I'm starting a kava bar in LA, because LA is like one of the hubs for the sober curious movement. There's so many people in LA who are either like not drinking at all anymore or looking for ways to cut back on alcohol. But it's very odd that there hasn't been really too much supply to meet that demand, which is kind of why we want to create like the space for people to hang out with each other and socialize without alcohol, you know, being at the forefront. So that's kind of one of the things that, you know, really brought us to starting Kavahana. But we've, after starting Kavahana, we have had a lot of like validation. So one of our partners, Superbloom, is like a non-alcoholic community. They're a nonprofit and they do a lot of events on the beach, wellness events, like Heal the Bay events, a lot of that. And their community loves kava. Some of them have heard of kava and some of them hadn't heard of kava, but those who hadn't really embraced it as an alternative to alcohol that they were searching for. So we've definitely seen a lot of market validation, both you know, throughout the city of LA and through all of our events that we've done so far.
Yeah. So where is Kavahana today? Like in terms of where people can find you?
Yeah. So we do pop-ups everywhere, many times a week. But we're actually announcing where we're going to be pretty much weekly, starting very soon. So yeah, keep on the lookout for that announcement soon. But yeah, we do a lot of pop-ups all the time. So on our Instagram, that's where you can find us.
And what are you serving, like at the farmers markets?
Yeah, we're serving kava, like basically kava mixed drinks. So we're serving all vegan coconut milk based kava drinks, because I found that kava and coconut are just like a match made in heaven. So we do matcha kava, which is a really unique drink because it's like combines the uplifting effects of the matcha with you know, more relaxing effects of kava. So that's one of our most popular. But we also have our brown sugar kava, which is like a brown sugar kava milk tea, and then we have our blue cloud, which is the blue spirulina vanilla coconut, and then we do a lot of like seasonal flavors. So I'm always just experimenting with flavors with kava. I found that creamier flavors work best with kava. I've tried like citrusy flavors, but the rooty, like earthy taste with the citrus doesn't always go well, but I'm still working on it.
Yeah. Does it, do you sell it like so that people can brew it at home as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually releasing our first ever product that you can buy anywhere in the U.S. because a lot of people have been asking us, you know, like on my TikTok, people who live in the Midwest and the East Coast, they're like, where can we get Kavahana's kava? So we're releasing kava nectar, which is a ready-to-drink kava powder made from nothing but the sun-dried roots of kava. So you just mix it with water or coconut milk, which is my favorite way to have it, or any beverage you want, and then you just drink it. And that's basically the easiest way to get your kava fix.
That's awesome. Do you have like an at-home kava recipe for like a drink that people can prepare at home, like that you can just share off the dome?
Yeah, I'm posting a lot of recipes on my TikTok, my favorite recipe is just very clean and simple. You just do a teaspoon of kava nectar, a cup to a cup and a half of coconut milk, and stir and enjoy. And it's like so fresh and good, and like the best coconut kava latte you'll ever have.
That sounds good. You just made me thirsty.
Yeah.
is a brick and mortar in the future someday?
Yes, it's actually coming up hopefully very soon. We're looking at real estate right now. We're looking at a lot of places around town and see where we fit in. Most likely it'll be on the west side, because that's where we found like a lot of our, you know, a lot of our people who really love us are kind of like in the wellness space. A lot live in Venice and Santa Monica. So that's kind of where we're looking for our real estate, for our bar. But Hopefully opening by the end of the year, if not early next year. So we're really excited about that.
That's really cool. Yeah, no, based on how this conversation started, I wasn't expecting for you to say that you were opening up in like Lincoln Heights or something on the east side, right? So I assumed the west side was in the future, but that makes sense. You know, I can totally see this fitting in that space. And, you know, especially with what you've told us regarding like muscle recovery for athletes and, you know, all of the athletes that live on the west side and like, you know, mountain bike and play beach volleyball and whatnot. Like, that totally seems to be a good cultural fit. I'm curious, do you have like a, you know, a business inspiration you look up to in terms of this industry that you would like to sort of emulate? Like, what are we talking here? Like, are we talking like cha-cha matcha, like that kind of deal? Or are we talking like getting all the Erewhon markets like that? Like, that's where we want to end up.
Yeah, cha-cha matcha has been like a huge inspiration for me ever since I started in Kavahana, because it's just like such a wonderful in-person space that everyone knows. Like the colors, the branding, everything is like, oh, that's like the pink and green, like, you know, that's cha-cha matcha. And they also have their product that they sell online, and that's like gaining a lot of traction too. So I think that's kind of like what we're emulating. I think they're expanding as well. So we're thinking there's a lot of things circulating, but maybe we're thinking like franchising or opening up like a lot of locations around California, maybe expanding nationwide. But that's all in the future. We got to start our first brick and mortar first. So yeah.
Yeah, of course. I just love to understand vision. Like, I'm really inspired by like entrepreneurs. I'm great with the vision, not so great with the execution. So it's really cool that you guys are executing at the ground level. Have folks tried cooking with kava? Because obviously, like, you see matcha everywhere, right? Like, you see it like in matcha cheesecakes, matcha ice cream everywhere, and people love it. Do you get that with kava?
With kava, like a lot of the industry right now, like if you go to Erewhon and you go to, you know, Whole Foods, you might see some kava based beverages. And what they do use is this thing called kava extract. So, it's basically the natural kava root that's been extracted into like a tincture. So, it's been either extracted with alcohol or water or some oil or something like that. And then you just do like a few drops into a drink. And that's kind of like what those seltzers you see at Whole Foods or Erewhon are based, mixed in. But we really want to stay very true to the roots. So we use the traditional like kava root, which is ground natural kava root. And that's what we use for all our drinks. We don't use extracts and anything like that. But with that comes a lot of like things that you can play with. So like matcha, you can do interesting flavors. You can do, we haven't tried this yet, but we have tried this. We haven't tried baking with it, but I have tried making it into ice cream, which was actually really good. It's like a very earthy ice cream. And one thing about kava is that after you drink it, your tongue starts to tingle. It's a very interesting thing. And kind of like if you've ever had a Sichuan peppercorn, that kind of like tingle. Yeah. And it kava's in the pepper family, so it makes sense. But yeah, so I've made smoothies and made ice creams out of kava, and it's been super interesting. So that's like another thing that I'd love to like, once we open up our brick and mortar, like be able to do things like that, like do ice cream and fun little experiments like that.
My mind is running wild with like the collabs you could do, like obviously with like incredible ice cream shops around Los Angeles, but like, you know, getting like a chef to come over, like I'm like kava panna cotta, that could be dope, you know, who knows. Is it, so flavor profile wise, are we talking like almost more like a turmeric in terms of that sort of like earthy that sort of like earthy undertone it gives things?
Yeah, exactly. Kava and turmeric actually have been mixed together many, many centuries ago. The Hawaiian king, Kamehameha, he actually used to mix his kava with coconut and turmeric. So those flavor profiles go together super well. It's super hard for me to explain what kava tastes like. I think you're just gonna have to try it. But yeah, I think earthiness is the number one flavor profile, but you can also get like a little bit of the pepperiness because it is part of the pepper family in some kavas. But different kavas taste different. So it depends on the region it's grown, how old the plant is. There's a lot of factors that come into play with the flavor profile.
That's really cool. I recently or we recently talked about an idea that Blue Bottle had. The founder of Blue Bottle, he's starting a Blue Bottle studio down to, somewhere in Los Angeles. I forget where, but basically he's going to offer like coffee omakase there, like coffee tasting. And
that's so cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Although we kind of like debated whether it was a good idea because, as you know, like coffee is an extremely powerful flavor, and it like kind of famously blows out your palate. So like the idea of doing a tasting of many coffees seems counterintuitive because like after the first, like, you know, two coffees, can you even really taste anything else? But it sounds like it could be interesting to try like different variations of kava based on like, you know, how old the plant is, you know, all the different, like a kava omakase I could get down with.
Yeah, I will say though, that because of the tingling on your tongue, after a while, it might be the kind of like coffee where it's like everything becomes so like tingly and numb in there that you don't even know like the difference. Yeah. So yeah, you might have to space it out a little bit, but that's okay. Like usually when you're drinking kava, like in kava ceremonies, they go on for like hours. So you can try one, you know, try it out, see how you feel, and then try the next one. And then by the end of the night, you just go to sleep.
That's all. Wait, so you've said kava ceremony a few times now. Can you talk to me about what a kava ceremony is?
Yeah, that's basically like, you know, the way kava's been traditionally had for 3,000 years in the South Pacific. Everyone sits around in a circle. You know, you hand knead the kava in a big wooden bowl, essentially, the kava bowl. It's called a tonoa. And everyone sits around, drinks kava, tells stories, sings. So it's kava has always traditionally been a very social drink. And kava ceremonies are very social events. And so, yeah, that's kind of like the spirit of kava that we're trying to bring as well with Kava Hana. And that's what we've done so far in all of our events. People come around, they try kava, they get like, the tingle throws them off sometimes, and they like tell their friends, and everyone like tries it. It's a great experience. We try to bring as much of that like social, the social roots of kava as we can in our company.
So, is there kind of a balance you have to strike there, where it's like we want to pay homage to the cultural roots, but we also don't want to like disrespect it somehow, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like you kind of want to honor the tradition without making it like Disneylandifying it, if you will. So like,
of course.
But do you have any plans to like host kava ceremonies?
Yes. Well, so I do like, in terms of like, you know, what we try to do, like I do a lot of education on my TikTok, where I teach about like the tradition of kava, where kava comes from, the actual science of the plant, things like that. So definitely very much respect the plant and, you know, where it's come from, and wanting to preserve it for generations to come. That's a big thing that a lot of people in the kava industry are worried about. Like, we want people to continue planting, continue talking about kava, and continue like the lineage of kava. So that's what I've been really trying to promote on my TikTok. But in terms of like in-person events, yeah, once we have our brick and mortar, like that's really the place where we can start doing kind of like, a lot of these, ceremonies, a lot of events. We're already thinking about bringing in, you know, notable Pacific Islanders in the kava industry to come and lead some, kava ceremonies in our space. So yeah, the brick and mortar is like the key to like everything for us.
That's awesome. I'm really excited for that. I just curious in terms of like things that you didn't anticipate having to deal with as a business owner that has been thrown your way and that you've sort of had to, you know, overcome in founding Kava Hana.
Yeah. So number one is education. Like, you know, most people in LA, 99% of people in LA have never even heard of kava, or the only kava they've heard of is the Mediterranean bowl place, like with the sea kava. It's so funny, the amount of people who've come up to me and been like, is this kava? Like, is this Mediterranean? And I'm like, no, this is kava with a K. It's a different kava. But education has definitely been the most challenging thing, like thinking about like ways to, you know, educate more people about kava, the benefits, get spread awareness. So like that, the key to that has really been social media, which is something that I As an engineer, it was like a very difficult learning curve, and still is, learning how to make educational videos, but make them fun, make them entertaining, for people to kind of just like really want to learn more about Kava and to spread like the good word of Kava around LA. So, and beyond LA too. So that's something that has been the biggest struggle for me, coming from my background and, no background in advertising or marketing or anything like that. But it's been like a really amazing journey. And I've learned so much about like how to do social media and market and put myself out there. And it's helped me too with like, again, I told you, like I have pretty bad social anxiety, and it's helped me a lot, like kind of overcome some of that. So it's been very good for me personally as well.
That's awesome. I mean, something about like, putting yourself out there on social media too, that can be like, that can be like a scary thing. So I completely understand. What have you learned works in like getting the word out about Kava on social media? Cause I think actually like, people that listen to this podcast may be trying to, promote other things on social media or like be thinking about how they can, educate folks using those platforms. And you're right. It's a really tough balance to strike. How do you make it entertaining and educational at the same time? What have you learned?
Yeah, at first I started out just making like very educational videos, like what is Kava? What are the effects of Kava? This and that. And those did well. But I think like when I started talking more about the business, like especially on my TikTok, what worked really well was talking about not just like, oh, the positives of starting a business, like this is how you can do this and that, all these great things, but talking about like the realities of starting a business. One of my videos that really blew up, like about a week or two ago, was me talking about, we did the 626 night market a few weeks ago, and our U-Haul broke down and all these crazy things like happened before getting there, and I just kind of documented all of it and put it on social media, and people really liked it. And then not only did they like like the video and like the like what we were doing, but they got interested in Kava because of just seeing like the realities of starting a business and trying to promote Kava in LA. They were like, what is Kava? So I think just like being very genuine and honest about like every aspect of starting a business and being organic on social media has been working for us. And that's what I would encourage anyone who's trying to promote something new or introduce what they're passionate about.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's like almost like there's a vulnerability aspect too.
Yeah.
It's like you don't have to project this perfect image all the time.
Yeah.
You can kind of let people into the struggle, and that kind of gives you credibility as being more genuine. And I think that's what people are looking for, right? They're looking for real. They're looking for real.
Totally. Yeah,
that's really cool. In terms of like working with a co-founder, I think that that's something that people who are, starting new ventures wonder about. Am I going to get along with this person? I recognize that I myself, I'm not speaking about me. I just mean people. Yeah. We all have strengths. We all have weaknesses. So how have you found, and so for people who are kind of like you, they find something that they are passionate about. They find something that maybe they, go on vacation or their family is from a place and they're like, you know what, this product is something I'm really passionate about and I want to start a business around this. What advice would you give them?
I would say like for me, before I started Kavahana, I was like doing for my previous company, like I was really doing all the market research, making sure all the ducks were in a row. I was like, is this the right thing? Should I be going into this and doing all of that? And this was the first time I really actually just did on my heart. I was like, this is something that has helped me so much. And I saw like just personally a big gap in the market in LA. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. Like I honestly, for this company, didn't do as much due diligence as I have in the past. And that's just because I had such a passion for it. And I just really thought like, this is something that I really want to get out there and share with the world. So I'm not saying don't do your due diligence, don't do your research. But if there is something that you're that passionate about and you feel that drive that much, like that's a good sign that that's something that you should really pursue and just do it.
It's a great point. It's like, I feel like a lot of people use the like research as a crutch sometimes to not start it, right? It's like a way to procrastinate ever doing it. They're like, I want to be, I want to make sure this is a sure thing before I dive in, you know? Mm-hmm. But sometimes you just got to take that plunge, right?
Totally. Yeah. So I would say, like, if you're feeling afraid, like, you know, I'm bootstrapping this company. I don't have a marketing team. We just did the Malibu Triathlon, and it was so funny. I did a video on this, but the Malibu Triathlon asked us to make a commercial for their Jumbotron. It's like a big sporting event, and I don't have like any marketing budget or any marketing team, but like we were able to still come up with something like pretty funny and engaging. Just by like I asked my followers to kind of help out with the video, and so like. I would say if, you know, if you're thinking, oh, I don't have like enough money to do, like to get a marketing team or do branding or anything like that. Like I did everything on Canva. We film everything organically ourselves. So like, even with very low resources, if you like have the heart for something, I think you can like still make it work for, you know, as much as you can, at the beginning, at least.
Yeah. It's like, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. It's like,
yeah.
You can definitely like, everything we've created for the LA Food Podcast has been on Canva. You know, we are built on Canva. So it's like, but I think some people might be like, well, I don't want to do it if I can't like design the perfect logo myself or something like that. And they're like, oh, I need to hire a designer to do that. And that'll cost me this much and whatnot. And, you know, it's just excuse. Sometimes you just got to do it and like realize, hey, you in this day and age, you have so many tools at your disposal to make something really cool.
Exactly. Like, yeah, I can't draw for the life of me, but I'm able to do some stuff in Canva because Canva has amazing templates and elements and things. So, I think the number one thing is like, I at first too, like I was like, I'm an engineer. Like, there's no way I can figure out how to do all this design stuff and marketing stuff and all that. Like, I was getting in my head too much. But then I was like, you know what? Like, let's just take it like one bite at a time, like one step at a time. And that's kind of how I've been chugging along ever since and learning things along the way. So yeah, that's the number one thing I would say, like number one advice I give to people. Like a lot of people ask me, oh, like, how did you like start this? Like, I'm so nervous to start my own thing. I'm like, how did you figure it all out? Like, you just figure it out. Like when things come up and it's like you're like unsure of how to get through, like you just take it one chunk at a time. That's the best way to think about it. Instead of just thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to become this multi-million-dollar brand with like locations everywhere. Like what are the steps I can take to open my first location and take it from there?
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to do it. You just got to do it. Absolutely. That's great advice. I'm inspired. You know, I might go out there and start a brand or something myself. I love it. So I, you know, we've talked a little bit about the sober, curious world. You know, I'm not sure. Do you still not drink?
Yes. I don't like, rarely do I ever drink. And if I do, I actually get like a huge headache now and I just like can't even do it anymore. So, no, I don't really drink anymore. I basically stopped craving alcohol completely after starting to drink kava. So that's another big benefit. A lot of, like former alcoholics, have credited kava to kind of helping them get off alcohol. So there's a lot of benefits to kava. And yeah, I would say that kava is one of the best alternatives to alcohol. One of the best things in the sober curious movement, because, you can actually feel you can actually feel kava. So like, it's something that actually helps you like get more social and talkative and, something that people are thinking about when they are like, well, something that people are a little bit afraid of when jumping into like becoming sober. It's like, oh, I won't have this like, this drink in my hand and something to help me feel more relaxed when I'm in social situations. Kava's there for you, for to fill that void. Yeah.
So is it kind of like CBD is to THC? You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
I would say like, I mean, I wouldn't compare the effects to CBD, but I would say it's like somewhere in the middle between like, like your morning coffee and like your evening alcohol. It's kind of like, it fills that like afternoon void, in my opinion.
Yeah. Which is, it's a void. It is. Cause you can't, you can't be out there having a coffee in the afternoon. Otherwise you'll be up all night. Totally. Deviating a little bit from kava, but as someone who doesn't drink, what do you like to drink when you're not drinking kava? Like, do you have other sort of mocktails and beverages of choice when you go out at night?
Yeah, well, so like people always ask me, oh, like, do you drink caffeine? I'm like, well, actually, one of the reasons why I started drinking kava is because I get like, I'm one of those people who gets really jittery and anxious from drinking caffeine. So even like, I love matcha, but even matcha sometimes, like, I have to drink it with kava for it to like not make me super jittery. The kava like kind of calms me down. But yeah, when I'm going out, really, like, honestly, kava is all I drink now. Maybe like some seltzers, like non-alcoholic seltzers, of course. But yeah, kava really has just been like my drink of choice every time I like in the mornings, there's a type of kava that you can drink in the mornings. It's more uplifting. For evenings, there's a more like heavy, sleepy time kava. There's more social kava. There's just so many different kinds of kava that like you can never go wrong with kava.
I know you didn't want to compare it to CBD, but you
Yeah.
literally, the way you just described it literally made it sound like, weed, like the different types of weed that,
Really?
yeah, that's what it sounds like. So, what I mean to say by that is I think there's a market. I think there's a market. One thing we like to ask our guests is, where do you like to eat when you're not, taking over the kava world?
Where do I like to eat? There is, so going back to like East LA, there is an amazing hot pot place called Chongqing Hot Pot. It's in, I cannot remember. It's somewhere in East LA, somewhere near Monterey Park. But when you go inside, you get transported to like ancient China. It is the most amazing interior ever. And they have all you can eat. Do they have all you can eat? I can't remember, but they have the best hot pot in LA, in my opinion. So
Wow.
definitely check out Chongqing Hot Pot. Yeah.
I love it. And then on the west side, where are you going on the west side?
On the west side, oh, that's a good question. Anywhere on Sawtelle. I'm like a huge Asian food junkie. So like Seoul Tofu, love that place. Kura Sushi, the best like cheap sushi on the west side, I would say.
Kura sushi. Okay, that's good to know. I'm always looking for like cheaper sushi alternatives because my wife is a massive sushi fan, and we typically reserve it for like just anniversaries and her birthday because I like sushi, but I also am someone who needs to eat a lot in order to feel full, and my level of full on sushi that can be an expensive endeavor. So good to know
Oh
that.
yeah, Kura, you'll get full on sushi, and it's rotating sushi too. So it's like on a conveyor belt, and they have these little robots that come around and give you your drinks. It's super fun. It's super cheap. The line is usually long, so my tip is they have an online wait list. Join their online wait list like an hour in advance, and then you just walk in.
I love places with online wait lists. And about robot waiters, wow, they got early and in on the AI replacing human game, huh? Hannah, this has been an absolute delight. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. Where can people find Kava Hannah and you on TikTok or Instagram or whatever social platform you guys are using?
Yeah, absolutely. On TikTok, my username is Kavahana, and then on Instagram, it's Kavahana Bar. So we post all our events on Instagram. We do events every week, and then on TikTok, I do a lot of education about Kava, a lot of like day in the lives, like random stuff. So.
Well, hey, wishing you and Neil nothing but success. And me personally, I can't wait to get my hands on some kava and see what this tingle is all about.
Absolutely. I'll have to send you some of our drinks. We'll drive all the way out to the east side sometime.
Oh, wow. That's real love because,
Just for you.
driving across town, that means something. Well, Hannah, thank you so much and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the LA Food Podcast. Thanks to our guest, Hada Willen, for joining us and sharing everything she knows about kava. Really excited for Kava Hana, and I can't wait to go check it out myself. If you like what you heard today, please leave us a comment, a review, a rating, a whatever they're called on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. Turns out those things really help, so we really, really appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another episode, but if you're looking for me in the meantime, you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at the LA Countdown. That's THELACOUNTDOWN. You can also find me on Instagram at LA Food Pod. That's LAFOODPOD.